when Rod Hashem stood his curtains open to 4:15, when they had their countdown on and were cooled down, the weather completely changed. I'm just saying, you satisfy Krishna, everything else is good. So in looking at what I was going to speak about today, I came across these verses from the teachings of Lord Kapiladev, very important section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sixth chapter of the teachings of Kapiladev, verse number 7. Devahute Ovacha, Nirini Nitaram Bhunam, Ashad Indriya Tarshanat, Yena Sambhavayam Nena, Prapranadam Tama Prabhu. Translation. Devahuti said, I am very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of this sense disturbance, my lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. Very poignant. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here at the beginning of Devahuti's questionings, the word asat indriya tarsanat is significant. Whenever Srila Prabhupada says in a purport such and such is significant, that's when our ears should perk up. When Prabhupada says it's significant, what does the Prabhupada say means significant? Here's what it is. Asat means impermanent, temporary. Indriya means senses, and tarsanat refers to agitation. Thus, asat indriya tarsanat means from being agitated by the temporarily manifest senses of the material body. We are evolving through different species of material bodily existence, sometimes as a human being, sometimes in an animal body. Therefore, the engagements of our material senses are also changing. In other words, the sense perception, the field of enjoyment, the activity of the dog is going to be considerably different than that of the human being, which will be considerably different than that of the, parakeet. Anything which changes is called temporary, or asat. We should know that beyond these temporary senses are our permanent senses, which are now covered by the material body. The permanent senses, being contaminated by matter, are not acting properly. Devotional service, therefore, involves freeing the senses from this contamination. When the contamination is completely removed and the senses act in the purity of unworthy Krishna consciousness, we have then attained sub-indriya, or eternal sense activities. Eternal sensory activities are called devotional service, whereas temporary sensory activities are called sense gratification. Unless one becomes tired of material sense gratification, there is no opportunity to hear the transcendental messages from persons like Kapila. Let me repeat that. It's very important. Unless, this is a key word here, it means that this is mandatory for what's to follow. Unless one becomes tired of material sense gratification, there is no opportunity to hear transcendental messages from persons like Kapila. Devahuti expressed that she was tired. Now that her husband had left home, she wanted to get relief by hearing the instructions of Lord Kapiladev. The Vedic literatures describe this material world as darkness. Actually, it is dark. Therefore, it requires sunlight, moonlight, and electricity. Just like it was 3 hours ago, very, very bright sun, and now the clouds have come, the sun's dissipated, hidden, and now it's gotten very dark. If we were not by nature dark, why would we require many arrangements for artificial light? The Vedas enjoin that we should not remain in darkness. Thus, by no jachig gama, we are instructed to go to the light, and that light is the spiritual world. Animals have no ability to know that they are in darkness, but humans can know. Like Devahuti, an intelligent person should therefore become disgusted with the darkness of ignorance. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:20, there is neither birth nor death for the soul. The soul is not destroyed when the body is annihilated. The soul puts bodies on and takes them off like clothes. This simple knowledge, Paul refers to it as a simple knowledge. The fact of the matter is, it's the highest level of knowledge, but for one who's in transcendental consciousness, it's a very simple fact. This simple knowledge is instructed in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Yet there are many big scholars and leaders who cannot understand the body is different from the person. This is because they do not study Bhagavad Gita in the proper way. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Consequently, no one is fully aware or convinced that the real person is not the body. This is called darkness. When one is disgusted with the darkness, human life begins. We're all sitting here nicely with our two legs and two arms and two eyes and two ears and very happy in this human form, but until we become disgusted with the darkness of the material world, we can't say we're engaged in human life. One who has become disgusted with material existence needs the instructions of a guru. Tasmat guru papadyeta jignasunshaya uttama. Being the wife of a great yogi, Devahuti understood her constitutional position. Therefore, she is placing her problem before her son Kapiladeva, an incarnation of God. Although Kapiladeva is her son, Devahuti does not hesitate to take instructions from him. She does not say, "Oh, he is my son, what can he tell me? I am the mother, I shall instruct him." Instruction has to be taken from one who has knowledge. It doesn't matter what his position is, whether he is a son, a boy, a sudra, a brahmin, a sannyasi, or a grihastha. One should simply learn from one who knows. As I was going through this, I'm one of those people that I had very carefully prepared notes. Everything's in great order, but an idea struck me as I was going through this right here. Earlier, Prabhupada says that the permanent senses being contaminated by matter are not acting properly. I had a situation this past week, which I'm sure many of you will be able to relate to. The water pressure in my house was completely non-existent, had been for some time. And it took a lot of effort to trace it down. I did this and did that and replaced this. Come to find out it was the pump in the well. The pump had gone bad. Because the pump had gone bad, the function of producing water and supplying it for the nourishment and benefit of the house was not working properly. This is exactly what's being said here. When our consciousness is contaminated, the pump had actually broken down and was sucking in more dirt than water, and so everything was coming up contaminated or stifled. So when that happens, then we don't function properly, just like the house wasn't functioning properly. In the same way, when we remove that contamination, then our Krishna consciousness comes to be. This is an idea that just came as I was thinking. So here in this portion of the Bhagavatam, we have another wonderful story. And everybody likes a good story, right? We all like a good story, you know, one that's very happy. It's got a joyful plot line and lots of pleasant ideas and information from it. That is not the business of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That objective of those kind of stories, that's left up to the fantasy literatures of this world. That's the business of wishful storytellers. Oh, la-da-da, everything's so nice, and he met her, and he met them, and he lived happily ever after, and the flowers bloomed, and the sun always came out. It doesn't work that way. That business is for those who prefer to live in the fantasy. Srimad Bhagavatam is aware of the factual nature of our plight within this material world. Asat indriya tarsanat. This is the word Prabhupada uses and makes immediate reference to. We're agitated into being frustrated by our temporary senses. No one wants to be agitated. I'm in retail and I deal with a lot of agitated people all the time. I happen to be in the plumbing section of retail, and when people come in to see me, they are not happy. Oh gee, I'd really like to buy a new car. I need a new tie. Whatever. No, they're coming in because they have a problem. They are very frustrated. And so when one is frustrated, they're not happy. Similarly, we are frustrated by the continual pressure and pushing of the senses to try and enjoy. To try and enjoy this material world. To try and make some pleasurable arrangement. But instead, asat indriya tarshana. We become frustrated by this. Now, as Devahuti puts it so brilliantly, I mean, when you listen to the speakers of Srimad Bhagavatam, you cannot find more brilliant expressions of the truth. I am very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of the sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. The abyss of ignorance. Those two words combined don't paint a pretty picture. First of all, an abyss. I mean, when we think of an abyss, you know, the people up in the Himalayas climbing over the mountains, and they come to this great chasm, and it's just as far down as they can see. They have to figure out some way to cross it. And it's extremely dangerous. And what kind of an abyss? An abyss of ignorance. Now, ignorance is defined by Mr. Webster as follows. Lacking in knowledge or training, unlearned, unformed, and unaware. And if that's not enough, the synonyms for ignorance, uninstructed, untutored, untaught, illiterate, unlettered, and uneducated. Not very flattering words when we're talking about an individual's qualities. If we are describing someone's qualities, we like very, you know, positive words. Very educated person, very knowledgeable, very friendly, very good. No. If one's in ignorance, all of those things are obstructed. And of course, we know from the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, all of us are in complete ignorance in this day and age. So these are the words that describe our condition. Yet, the truth is that these words aptly give the real circumstance of what we're experiencing in the material world. That's just the reality. So how do we come to this position? Well, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport here, the permanent senses have become contaminated by matter. We have allowed the temporary senses to cover our permanent senses with the material body. Just like the example I was giving a couple of moments ago. The pure water became contaminated by the dirt and silt and sand and mud and debris. Therefore, it was not functional. It was not proper. Covered up what was pure with something impure. So not that the spirit soul becomes covered. The spirit soul is aloof, as Prabhupada quotes in the second chapter of the Gita. But what happens is that the body becomes polluted. Instead of our spiritual consciousness, we become material consciousness. So this is what's called illusion. Now, there are many types of entertainers, you can say, who are illusionists. Very, very famous ones. There's, one's Harry Houdini. Our modern times, you have your Penn and Teller, David Copperfields. You know, they're very expert in the activity of presenting an illusion. They allow you to see one thing while at the same time doing something else, but making you believe that what you're seeing is the reality, not what they're doing over here. This is the nature of an illusionist. So by actually focusing your consciousness and controlling your consciousness in this direction, they're able to do something else over here which isn't detected and which is what really is going on, but you're thinking that this is it because your attention is focused here. Why? Because they've drawn your attention there with some sleight of hand or some stage prop or something like that. So this is exactly what Maya does to us. This is exactly, Maya is the best illusionist there is. Houdini and Penn and Teller and these guys, they got nothing on Maya. Maya is directing your attention away from that which is real, that which is sat, as Prabhupada says, and making us think that the illusion is the reality. And then she simply stands back and watches as we make fools of ourselves. This is how it happens, you know. These illusionists, when you watch them, they know the people that are assisting them, they know what's going on, you know. Oh, I know how that gets done. I know how he's doing that. In my early teenage years, I was a stage assistant for a magician. And this is with a local guy where I was growing up that did, you know, Boy Scout parties and, you know, high school things and stuff like that. So I served as his assistant sometimes. So when he would do his performance, I wasn't fooled by any of the tricks because I was the one helping him set the tricks up. Maya has her agents as well that help her in fooling the illusion energy, illusion conditioned soul, and those prominent assistants are material senses. So, you know, I would watch these people, oh, they go, you fools, if you only knew how this is done. This is the position of the spiritual master, position of all the great acharyas in our line. They look at us and they, ha! You foolish person. If you only knew what the reality is. Now, of course, as an assistant for this magician, I had to take an oath that I wouldn't divulge any of the secrets that I knew. So I had to, you know, just keep quiet and watch people get fooled and, you know, come up and assist me, and they just made a complete fool of in front of all their friends and associates, you know, because they became the fall guy for this trick. So I was bound by oath not to see anything. The spiritual master is not bound by any type of restriction. He has no reason to keep the truth from us. Matter of fact, that's his entire purpose, to pull back the curtain of Maya, to pull back that curtain of illusion and reveal to us the frailty of what's actually going on. Here again, just another example from those of us who grew up here. The Wizard of Oz. That big climactic scene at the end where Toto goes over and with his little dog teeth grabs the curtain and yanks it all the way back, and there's the wizard playing with dials and levers making everything. Oh, don't pay any attention to that guy. That's the way Maya is. And the spiritual master takes the covering that we have and allows us to see what really is going on. The guru pulls back this curtain of illusion and imparts to us the true knowledge of how this world functions. Not how we think it functions, but how it actually functions. This requires one thing on our part. Now, that is the desire to get free from the suffering. First, we have to realize we're suffering. We are not in an enjoyable position here in this world. So when we come to that point, as Prabhupada said, that's when we come to the human platform. When we come to that point, we get the opportunity to be free from suffering. Now, in the successive verses here, Devahuti says, and I think it's important to read these, "Your Lordship is my only means of getting out of this darkest region of ignorance, because you are my transcendental eye, which by your mercy alone I have attained after many, many births. You are the supreme personality of Godhead, the origin and the supreme lord of all living entities. You have arisen to disseminate the rays of the sun in order to dissipate the darkness of the ignorance of the universe. Now be pleased, my lord, to dispel my great illusion. Through my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your Maya and have identified myself with the body and consequent bodily relations. And finally, I have taken shelter of your lotus feet because you are the only person of whom to take shelter. You are the axe which can cut the tree of material existence. I therefore offer my obeisances unto you." So we have to come to this point. We have to come to this point of wanting to be free, of realizing we're suffering, of realizing we're in illusion, realizing we're bound up, and wanting to be free of that. Now, Prabhupada further says in the purport here, "One who has become disgusted with material existence needs the instruction of a guru." So what is that instruction of a guru? Dukkha alayam ashashvatam. Dukkha alayam ashashvatam. Alayam means a place of dukkha, which is like Dukhi Krishna, the associate of Narottam Das Thakur, unhappy. So a place of unhappiness and misery, temporary. So a miserable place that is temporary and unhappy. This is what our existence in this material world, without spiritual knowledge, without having that curtain removed by the spiritual master. Once we realize this, by the mercy of the spirit, super soul, by the mercy of the Paramatma, then we get the opportunity to come in touch with the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. And that bona fide spiritual master will then begin the process of removing the darkness of ignorance from us, of removing our contaminated vision. Every day we say this prayer, Om Jnana Tamadam Dasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksuhum Manitamina Tasmai Sri Guru Venamaha. I was born into the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my obeisances unto him. So who is to be understood as the guru? That's the next question. Okay, if I realize I'm suffering and I want to get free and I need a guru, how do I understand who is a guru? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives us that instruction. Kiva vipra, kiva nyasa, sudra kena nar, ye Krishna tattva veta se guru hoy. This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. For him, his instructions to Sanatana Goswami. The teaching of Mahaprabhu is that whoever is qualified in Krishna consciousness, who understands the proper distinction between spirit and matter, that person can become a guru. Family name, the material identity, these things are external and do not matter. One simply must know the science of Krishna consciousness. When we consult with an engineer, or with a doctor, or with a lawyer, we don't inquire from them, oh, what caste do you come from? What is your family name? What is your lineage and village you've come from? It's not important. We see, oh, they're very knowledgeable. This is a good lawyer. This is a good scientist. And we take it at that. In the same way, we have to understand that when one is qualified in the science of Krishna consciousness, he can be a guru. She can be a guru. That person can be a guru because the background is not what's important. Mahaprabhu herself, he was a brahmana. He was a sannyasi. Yet when he was in Jagannath Puri and preparing to go to South India, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya told to him, there is one Brahmin in South India. His name is one devotee. He actually is a Brahmin, one devotee. His name is Ramananda Roy. He is the most advanced of Vaishnavas, and you should seek him out. So when Mahaprabhu came across Ramananda Roy, he inquired from him, please, you instruct me. Give me the science of Krishna consciousness. But he noticed something. Ramananda Roy was a little hesitant. He didn't really want to say anything. Mahaprabhu said, why are you hesitating? You may be a grihastha, you may be from a different sudra line, but I'm prepared to take lessons from you because you know the science of Krishna. And this is confirmed by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, a great devotee as well. So this is the clear message in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that when a person is knowledgeable of Krishna, is knowledgeable of the difference between matter and spirit, this person can become a guru. This person who knows Krishna by knowledge, by teachings, and just as important, by example. This is a very important aspect of it, the example. Just like today we're celebrating the disappearance day of Lokanath Goswami, a very high example of an exalted devotee and a spiritual master, a guru. Lokanath Goswami was born in Bangladesh. And his father was Sri Padmanabh Bhattacharya, and his mother was Sri Sita Devi. And Padmanabh Bhattacharya, his father, was a disciple of and a follower of Advaita Acharya. So he was in a very good devotional line. And he was a favorite of Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya very, very much liked him. So you can imagine in a family where you're the disciple of Advaita Acharya and favored by Advaita Acharya, there was much katha about Mahaprabhu during his Navadvip Leela. And he also had a younger brother, Pagalba. Pagalba, there's not much mention or anything made about him. Anyway, from his childhood, Lokanath heard all of these talks about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he decided that he wanted to go to Navadvip. He wanted to have the darshan of Mahaprabhu. He wanted to be able to serve Mahaprabhu, to spend his entire life living with him. He had no interest in the family activities or childhood activities, so at a young teenage time, he left his mother and father and family and went to Navadvip to join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It mentions that when Sri Gaurasundara was introduced to Lokanath Goswami, he very affectionately embraced him. Imagine that. First time you're introduced to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he embraces you. This is how special Lokanath was. This is how special. So, after a few short days of being there in the association of Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him and he said to him, I want you to leave and go to Vrindavan. I have great service for you in Vrindavan. Now, Lokanath was completely just devastated by this news. In his mind, he had come to take shelter of Mahaprabhu and spend his life serving him personally. He's been here a few short days and Mahaprabhu said, okay, now you go to Vrindavan. Plus, Lokanath was a very astute devotee, and he could understand that shortly, Mahaprabhu was going to take his sannyas leela. I don't want to leave before this happens. So, Mahaprabhu wasn't having any of it. He instructed him, he told him, you go to Vrindavan, I will be with you in Vrindavan. Plus, I'm going to sing with you Bhugarbha Goswami. Bhugarbha Goswami and Lokanath Goswami, they were the first two Goswamis to go to Vrindavan. They're actually in some places considered to be the seventh and eighth of the Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were very important. That's how important they were. So, with tears flowing in his eyes, Lokanatha offered his obeisances to Mahaprabhu, who once again embraced him, and then took him to the side and told him the truths of devotional service, confidential subject matters, and then sent him off to Vrindavan. This means, of course, Lokanath never was going to return home. He left home to go to Navadvipa, and then Mahaprabhu and Navadvipa sent him to Vrindavan. So, feeling great, great affliction of separation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he began the long journey to Vrindavan, going through different holy places and stopping and visiting with the devotees and Vaishnavas there. And finally, he came to Vrindavan itself. Now, meanwhile, as they say, meanwhile, back in Navadvipa, certainly Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relocated himself to Jagannath Puri. And then after some time in Jagannath Puri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to spread his mercy of Sri Krishna Nam and go to South India. The memories of his travels to South India came to the ears of Lokanath Goswami in Vrindavan. Lokanath thought, Mahaprabhu is supposed to come here. He went to South India instead. All right, I'll go to South India. I did a little calculation. The distance from Vrindavan, let's just use Sri Rangam as a approximate point for South India, because it's pretty far south. And we know Mahaprabhu went there. So, it's 2,135 kilometers, about 1,450 miles, 440 hours by walking. That's about 18 days. Now, of course, any of you that have had the experiences I have to be on Padyatra know that your days walking don't always go the way you think they should or hope that they might. So let's roughly say 3 weeks of walking from Vrindavan to get to Sri Rangam. As he gets to South India, he hears, oh, Mahaprabhu's gone to Vrindavan. Let this be a warning to us. Be patient in executing your devotional service. Mahaprabhu said, I will come to Vrindavan. He was in Vrindavan. Oh, Mahaprabhu's going to South India. Let me go to South India. Oh, but he's going to Vrindavan. So he heard that very quickly. 440 hours. He got back to Vrindavan. Only to find that Mahaprabhu was going to Prayag. All right, I'll go to Prayag. As soon as sun breaks tomorrow, I will leave. When he took rest that night, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to him in a dream. My dear Lokanath, why are you running around here and there, back and forth, up and down, this new Monday? You just stay in Vrindavan. You don't go anywhere else. I have great service for you to do while you're in Vrindavan. Just stay there and be patient. So in this way, Lokanath gave up his desires for traveling. He gave up his desire to see Mahaprabhu again and took that order of Mahaprabhu as his life and soul. Stay in Vrindavan. Wouldn't it be nice to get that instruction? You just stay in Vrindavan. You just go to Govardhan and stay at Govardhan. I keep waiting. At any rate, so Lokanath got this instruction. And he kept himself in seclusion. He didn't mix with others. He, you know, found a nice bhajan kutir out in the forested regions, and he stayed out there, and he would go from one place to another, but always in seclusion, not mixing with them. But after some time, the dear followers of Mahaprabhu began to arrive. Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Gopal Bhatta, and others like that. And they developed very close friendships. And they very, very much appreciated, because Lokanath Goswami was the eldest of all of these devotees. And he was very, very much respected. And he was always absorbing very, very intense models of ecstatic love. So Lokanath Goswami used to go around to these different places throughout Brajadham. And wherever he would go, he would just sit down and absorb himself in the chanting of the holy name and the remembrance of the Lord's pastimes. And so in this way, he came to the banks of Kishori Kund, a very, very beautiful place in Vrindavan. And he remained there for some days, very happily executing his bhajan. And he had within his heart a certain desire that he wanted to worship a form of the Lord, deity. You know, a little bit difficult, you know, deities usually Vaishan. I mean, you live in a forest under a different tree each night. I don't think you're going to pull off Sringar like this. This takes a big temple, organization by people like Mukia and so many of our assistants to put everything together. This isn't done if you're living under a tree each night. How are you even going to move? So, anyway, Lokanath was thinking like this. And this was in his heart. He wasn't revealing this to anyone. But, of course, we know who's in everyone's heart. That's the Lord. So, in essence, he was revealing this to the Lord. So, the deity form came before Lokanath. And that deity was known as Radhavinod. And there, just in front of him, was the form of Radhavinod one day, just on the banks of Kushalikund. And he looked this way, there, who is what? How has this happened? I'm here by myself. Someone must have brought. So in the mystery, he was looking. Seeing Lokanath very deeply puzzled like this, Radhavinod laughed out loud. Who would bring me here? I have come here all by myself. I live here on the banks of Kushalikund. This is my village, and I have come to have you serve me. Now I'm hungry. Please give me something to eat. Isn't it nice to think that someday we might be able to have a relationship with a deity like that? Bring me something to eat. Actually, one time in Dallas, I can't remember his name now. A long time Kajari in Dallas, Prabhupada was there taking darshan, greeting the deities, and Prabhupada turned to him. He said, so, what is the mood of the deity? Yes, you are the intimate servant of the deity, you should know the mood of the deity. So those that are serving the deity very intimately, we can understand, they know, this is their service. You know. What to speak of if you've done it for years upon years upon years upon years. So in this way, the deity may sometimes speak like that. But so Lokanath, when he heard this, he was beside himself with bliss and ecstasy, and he made some nice food stuff and offered them to Radhavinod. And then he made a nice bed of flowers, some local flowers, and put the deity down on the bed, flowers, and fanned him with some kind of a leaf, and then meditated very deeply and massaging the lotus feet of the deity while he slept. Oh, yes, the toes, and then one toe, and then between the toes, and then at the ankle, like that, you know, nice meditation. And in this way it says he was drinking as if a flow of honey-like nectar was coming into his heart. So Lokanath, as I mentioned, he had no permanent abode, but now he had a deity. So some of the Brajavasi villagers, they wanted to build him a little thatched hut. Let us build a little place here, and you can put your deity in case you want. So I'm not taking up a permanent residence. Just give me a bag. Now, have you seen Radhavinod in Jaipur? Not so big. You know, maybe, how do you do it? Like this? What do you do that? Where is she? Where's your mother? That's the right way out there. So yeah, he's about this big. So we kept him in that bag and went around his neck. Now, I've seen Radhavinod also. I mean, you know, he's not very big, but he's black stone. Anyway, so he kept him around his neck like this, and he would go throughout the forest looking for places, and Radhavinod would tell him, oh, this is where I had that pastime there. Oh yeah, this place over here is where I had that pastime there. Pretty amazing. So in this way, it was considered that the decoration around his neck was like a crest jewel that he kept in this compartment of his heart. And this deity was the only other companion he would travel with. So anyway, it's very difficult for one to describe the character of Lokanath Goswami. When Mahaprabhu and some of the other Goswamis began to perform their disappearance lila, Lokanath Goswami maintained his life only by the fact that I still have to stay here in Vrindavan and serve Mahaprabhu. I can't go yet. Of course, we know that Lokanath Goswami had one disciple, and that one disciple was the famous Narottam Das Thakur Mahasai. That's a whole other conversation for a whole other five or six classes. But the important thing about his accepting Narottam as his disciple, Narottam and Lokanath were, of course, in completely different castes. Lokanath Goswami came from a proper Brahmin caste. Narottam came from a Vaishya Kshatriya class, you know, rulers and administrators like that. But he accepted him, and Narottam Das Thakur accepted Lokanath with his heart and soul. So, by the presence of an aspiring disciple and the presence of a qualified guru, This will surpass all other considerations. And back to the purport Srila Prabhupada started this with, this is the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Keep a vipra, keep an asa. Doesn't matter who you are, what your background is. If you are expert in the science of Krishna, if you are qualified to be a disciple, you can become a guru. This is his mood. This is what Prabhupada mentions is the way they did it. Of course, one other thing with Lokanath Goswami was when Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami began to, at the encouragement of all the other Brijvasis, to offer Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, he went to the different devotees. This is an important point. Prabhu, I'd like you to write something. Okay, I'll do it. I'll get it back to you in a day or two. That wasn't the move. No, I can write Chaitanya Charitamrita. No problem. Well, he went to every Vaishnava and begged, please, give me your blessings. I've been given this task. Please give me your mercy. I can't do it. So he went to Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath Goswami said, yes, I'll give you my mercy on one condition. What was that condition? Don't mention my name. You will ruin your entire writing if you put my name in it. You want my blessings? Here's the condition. You accept? All right, I will take your blessing. Okay. So this is why we don't see the name of Lokanath Goswami mentioned in Chaitanya. There's actually one very small spot in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's mentioned, and so-and-so, so many devotees amongst was Lokanath Goswami. Boom. That's it. That's all it says. So in this way, you know, he was not mentioned as a prominent part of these times. There's a wonderful prayer that Narottam Das Thakura writes about Lokanath Goswami. Oh my Lord Lokanath, please keep me at your feet. And if it pleases you, please let your glance of mercy fall upon me. I have a great longing, and my mind's desire might be fulfilled by this longing. Whenever one gets the association of Lord Chaitanya, there one also gets the association of Radha and Krishna. If you are not merciful unto me, then who will be? This time, please fulfill my mind's desire. In the three worlds, I have no one other than you. Please keep me near to your lotus feet, where I might hear, day and night, your songs describing the Leela of Radha and Krishna. Without you, this desire of Narottam cannot be fulfilled. So this was the mood of Narottam Das Thakur. This was the example of Lokanath Goswami. By Lokanath Goswami's diligent efforts in going to Vrindavan and uncovering all the holy places, we have these grand temples we have. And with these grand temples we have these wonderful festivals. And with these wonderful festivals we have Chandanyatra. So our observance today of Chandanyatra is in part due to the blessings and mercy of Lokanath Goswami. So as we look at this beautiful Shringar, and as we appreciate this wonderful service, we can appreciate devotees like Lokanath Goswami that went to Vrindavan on the instruction of Mahaprabhu and uncovered these holy places. So that when we feel these cooling rays emanating from the body of Radhasham Sundar as they stand covered in sandal paste, ground, as Padamukhi said, by the loving efforts of so many people in this community, let us appreciate that we have a great depth for the ability to observe these festivals. So I'll finish there. Thank you very much for your time. I think I'm supposed to finish at 6 and boom. Yeah. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. If anybody has corrections,